From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Maryland's legislature has given Attorney General Brian Frosch authority to sue the federal government without first seeking the approval of the governor.
We intend to sue when and if the Trump administration violates the law. And I think the Muslim ban is a good example. It was ill-considered, poorly drafted, and quite broad.
We sit down with Frosch to discuss his recommendation for new statewide guidelines for testing and storing rape kits, as well as his thoughts on President Trump's executive order on sanctuary cities, what changes could make more defendants safe to release before trial, and how to keep generic prescription drug prices from spiking. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Maryland's Democratic Attorney General Brian Frosch stands at the center of intense political crosscurrents in the Free State. Democrats in the legislature, his former colleagues, channeled their frustration with the new Republican president in Washington by vesting in Frosch the power to sue the Trump administration without first getting approval from Maryland's governor, Republican Larry Hogan. Until last week, Frosch was one of the few state attorneys general who needed to get their governor's okay to sue. Governor Hogan is not pleased with the change. We've got Attorney General Frosch with us for this half hour. I hope to ask him about bail reform, prescription drug price gouging, and proposed statewide guidelines for how to test and store rape kits. I'd like to start with the new powers to sue. First, though, I should ask about the breaking news. Brian Frosch, first of all, welcome back to On the Record.
Thanks for having me, Sheila.
The breaking news, the Fourth Circuit upheld Maryland's ban on assault weapons.
Yes, it did.
Tell me what that case was.
So in 2013, we passed the Firearm Safety Act, and we outlawed the sale of military-style assault weapons and large-capacity magazines, gun magazines that carry more than 10 rounds of ammunition. And that law was challenged in court. It was upheld in the federal district court in Maryland, but overturned originally in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. Our office then appealed to the full Fourth Circuit. The first round is a three-judge court. The full court took it, and there was a 10-4 decision where the court held, the full Court of Appeals held that our assault weapons ban is constitutional. Our ban on large capacity magazines is constitutional.
Now it's likely to go to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, it's possible. The other side, the plaintiffs, can ask the Supreme Court to grant certiorari. There have been at least two other circuits where assault weapons ban in New York, Connecticut in the Second Circuit, and Illinois in the Seventh Circuit were challenged and upheld on appeal. It's possible the Supreme Court would take it, but I think it's unlikely.
So you think that this law will be in effect in Maryland?
I think this decision will stand. It's a very strong decision by 10 judges on the Fourth Circuit saying that it is not a violation of the Second Amendment to ban military-style assault weapons. It seems like common sense, but there are, of course, those who disagree.
Okay, thanks for bringing us that news. I do want to ask about these expanded powers. Why did you feel you needed independent authority to sue the federal government?
Well, a number of my former colleagues in the General Assembly raised the question about why we hadn't engaged, especially on the Muslim ban. And I told them we needed the governor's approval to sue the federal government, and they crafted legislation to address that. And Maryland is unlike most of our sister jurisdictions in that the Attorney General, though independently elected, has to get either permission from the General Assembly or from the governor in order to bring suit.
Well, if there's one thing we have seen in the last several weeks is that the Democratic-controlled legislature in Maryland is happy to give the Attorney General, Brian Frosch, almost anything he asks for. So why couldn't you? Why couldn't you have gotten whatever authority you needed to sue from your, as you said, your former colleagues in the legislature?
Well, ultimately, I did, or I did last week. They passed a joint resolution that said that when the federal government violates the civil rights of Marylanders or endangers our environment or engages in something like a ban on members of a particular religion, that our office could bring suit to vindicate the rights of our citizens and residents.
I assume that President Trump has given you a rich target list. I'm thinking you mentioned the Muslim ban, the executive order on immigration, also orders on deportation, minimizing burdens of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, plans to reduce environmental and financial regulation. Tell us how you are approaching these new powers. What do you intend to sue over?
We intend to sue when and if the Trump administration violates the law. And I think the Muslim ban is a good example. It was ill-considered, poorly drafted, and quite broad ban based on the religion of people and without due process. The ban has been enjoined nationwide by the United States District Court in Washington and the Ninth Circuit in Washington State, California, et cetera.
But let me ask, since you say it is a good example, that was that legal challenge was made by your colleague, the Attorney General of Washington State.
Correct.
As I understand it, your office filed a friend of the court brief.
That's right.
So at that time, you did not have independent authority to challenge it, but it got challenged.
That's right.
What difference did it make that you didn't have the authority?
Well, thankfully, the Attorney General of Washington asked for a nationwide injunction and received it. But nobody was able to go to court in Maryland and protect Maryland residents from that Muslim ban. And I think we were very lucky. You know, in Virginia and New York and Massachusetts, attorneys general filed suit. They were mostly successful, but the injunctions applied only to those states. And the Attorney General of Washington State had a unique lawsuit, and he asked for a nationwide injunction and was granted it. That's not going to happen all the time. So there are some situations in which our interests in Maryland may be particularly under threat from the Trump administration. And it seems to me the Attorney General of Maryland ought to be the one who has the ability to protect our citizens. One very good example is the Senate sadly just confirmed Scott Pruitt to be the administrator, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. Scott Pruitt was the Attorney General of Oklahoma, where he brought a series of challenges to the environmental laws of the United States. And one in which he participated was a challenge to the Chesapeake Bay program. Now, you know, if the Attorney General of Maryland can't bring suit to stand up for the Chesapeake Bay program, who can? Who should?
So are you intending to file suit against the EPA?
We'll see what they do. I mean, they're talking now about changing the waters of the state rule. They're talking about changing the Clean Power Program. These are programs that protect protect waters around our state, wetlands all around the country. And the Clean Power Rule is a rule that requires power generators to reduce their carbon emissions. Those are, I think, particularly important to our folks. So far, the Trump administration hasn't followed through on their, you can call them promises or threats, but they haven't followed through on what they said they're going to do. We'll be looking out for it.
It's Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the recent expansion of his powers to permit him to sue the federal government without approval from the governor or the legislature. The White House is reissuing what you call a Muslim ban, reissuing the executive order on who is going to be allowed in, which is something that affects people in Maryland. Are you planning to sue over that, the new ban?
Yes, we are. It depends on what form the new executive order takes. If it takes a new form, we obviously have to look at what it is, how it changes the old one, which we believe is illegal. If it complies with the law, if it doesn't violate the civil rights of our citizens and residents, then we won't file suit. If it does, we likely will.
You are seeking an extra $1 million in the state budget that begins not this coming summer, but next summer, 2018, for 5 lawyers to handle these new responsibilities. But at least in terms of the kind of news coverage it got, when your expanded powers resolution was moving through the General Assembly, proponents said you could handle it with your current resources. Is this bait and switch?
Not even a little bit. So both measures were introduced on the same day, and it was very clear why. I mean, a joint resolution cannot mandate the expenditure of funds, and a bill can. The General Assembly wanted to take swift action, and they did. The fastest thing they could do is pass the joint resolution, sign it, and be done with it. They have. It doesn't require the governor's signature. So that's done. That's the law. We have the authority. At the same time, and I was very upfront with folks, I said, we don't have any additional resources. Everybody in my office has a full-time job. The additional responsibilities that this work will entail falls on folks who are working full-time, and it means they'll work overtime. They'll work nights and weekends, and we'll do the best we can. We can do a better job if we have additional resources, and that's what the bill is about.
And as you pointed out, the resolution that expanded your powers did not need the governor's signature.
That's right.
But spending does need his approval. If Governor Hogan declines to expand your staff, what will you do?
A couple things will happen. If he vetoes the legislation, the General Assembly can override the veto. That's assuming it passes in the first place. If it passes, he vetoes it, and they fail to override it, we'll continue to do the best we can with the resources we have now.
Last month, President Trump signed an executive order promising to withhold federal money from what it calls sanctuary jurisdictions.
Right.
A pair of draft memos signed by the Secretary of Homeland Security, John Kelly, outlines a strategy that would immediately deport many more undocumented immigrants and allow for expedited deportations. What's your perspective on that?
I think it's very disturbing. I think it's terrible policy. I think it's likely to make us less safe, not more safe. It'll drive people into hiding. It will stop people from reporting crimes, showing up at courthouses as witnesses and complainants about crimes. So I think it makes us less safe. I think it's bad for our economy. It's not going to create jobs for Americans that those jobs are available now. The folks who are taking them are at the lowest rung of the wage ladder for the most part, and they're getting by on subsistence wages and doing work that most folks don't want to do. So I think you'll find that there are farms where the crops don't get picked, and there are seafood factories where and poultry factories and the like where there aren't folks who are clamoring to do that very unpleasant, difficult, and poorly paid work. So I'm really skeptical that this will do what the president expects it to do. And then on top of that, I think you create unnecessary hardship when you say that everybody who is here without documents is liable for immediate deportation. You run the risk of violating the due process rights of folks who are here without documents. They still cannot be detained without probable cause.
Does any of that give you a legal basis to challenge?
It depends. We don't know. We haven't seen the full the full written form of what they propose to do, and we haven't seen how they do it. I think we'll look at how it rolls out and see if they're violating the law, violating the Constitution.
We need to take a quick break here. When we come back, lots more to raise with Attorney General Frosch. Cash bail, how police handle evidence of rape, prescription drug prices, lots to talk about. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm speaking with Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch. In addition to giving you power to sue the Trump administration, Attorney General Frosch, the General Assembly is also considering a pair of proposals that would address the rising cost of prescription drug prices. These bills would require drug companies to disclose the basis for drug costs and to notify the public before price increases of 10% or more. And they would also give you the power to go after companies for price gouging.
That's right.
How do you decide what is a price gouge?
So price gouging is defined in the legislation. It's an unconscionable increase in prices, which is further defined as a sharp increase that is unexplained by costs, either production or marketing, and a drug that's vital, that's either life-sustaining or something that addresses a chronic problem that impairs somebody's ability to do normal everyday activities. So it's drugs that are vital to people's lives where there is a steep and unaffordable, inexplicable increase in the price. And we've seen this happen repeatedly in recent years in generic drugs. And the price gouging bill is addressed solely at generic drugs, drugs that are off patent, that have been on the market at least 17 years. Many of them have been around for 30, 40, 60 years. The most notorious among them, I think, is a drug called Daraprim. It's now, I think, 64 years old. The price went from $13.50 a pill to $750 a pill. It's used for certain infections. There was the U.S. Senate Committee on Aging did a study of steep increases in generic drugs in the prices of them. They talked about this one two-month-old baby girl who had toxoplasmosis. She needed Daraprim. The cost of her treatment, because they jacked up the price just when she was born, the cost of her treatment was $360,000. Her parents didn't have it. If she survived, she would have been severely impaired, and her chances of survival were low without it. So it's that kind of price increase. The Senate Committee on Aging found five or six other drugs where the prices went up 2,000%, 3,000%, and these are, you know, 30, 40, 50-year-old drugs. It's not like there is research and development that had to be done recently on them. They've been on the market for years. They've been manufactured for years. It's that folks who used to be in the hedge fund business have migrated to the pharmaceutical business. They've seen an opportunity to jack prices up, found a little monopoly. Folks who are absolutely dependent upon the drug need it for their survival, and they raise the prices as much as they possibly can.
These are obviously prices that are not being charged just in Maryland.
That's right.
This is a national problem. Why does it make sense for Maryland's attorney general to have the authority to sue in this case?
Because there are Marylanders who are suffering as a result of these price increases, and somebody's got to protect them. That's the job of the attorney general.
Drug companies have complained that this legislation would require them to reveal trade secrets, and that would reduce competition and ultimately not be good for consumers.
The other bill is a price transparency bill, and it would require them to provide certain cost information to the General Assembly. And I think people are fairly comfortable that it will not require any trade secrets be revealed, and or any information that is secret necessary for the businesses to survive. That legislation is useful, I think, to us in the price gouging legislation, which is the legislation that our office is pushing. But I think the provisions of it are protective enough of the pharmaceutical companies that they won't be required to reveal trade secrets.
The last time you were with us on the record, we talked about the constitutionality of Maryland's cash bail system. Since then, at your urging, the state's highest court voted unanimously in favor of an overhaul. This coming summer, new rules will require judges to consider whether defendants pose a danger or are a flight risk and impose, quote, the least onerous, close quote, conditions when setting bail. So is this essentially mission accomplished in terms of reforming bail?
This is an extremely positive step, and it takes us most of the way we need to go in Maryland. We are putting people in jail because they're poor. Bail gets set at a low amount. Judge expects the defendant to make bail, but there are some folks who can't afford $500, $100, $1,000, and consequently spend days, sometimes weeks or months, in jail just because they don't have enough money to make bail. The judge doesn't think they're dangerous because he or she has set bail at a fairly low amount. This rule will solve that problem. But there is still important work to be done. All of the jurisdictions in Maryland ought to have robust pretrial systems that allow a judge to get information about the defendant and to do something in between saying, you're free, you're locked up. It's important if somebody is going to flee before trial or commit a crime, hurt somebody before trial, it's important to lock those folks up. But there are some folks who are in between the group that clearly isn't going to offend and the group that is likely to. And for them, having periodic drug tests, requiring them to wear a GPS device, just requiring them to show up are important tools for judges to use. And if we were to provide those tools statewide, as they exist in some counties already, but if we provide them statewide, we'll get much better results.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch about some of the issues facing his office. At the start of this year, your office reported that across the state, 3,700 sexual assault evidence kits, commonly known as rape kits, were untested. Your report said it was not a wait list or backlog that had kept these kits from being tested, but because law enforcement decided not to submit them for testing. What kinds of reasons were given to your office?
There were a lot of different reasons, some good reasons and some not so good. Let me say, first of all, that the number is hard to judge by because different jurisdictions had different policies for how long they kept the test kits. So there were more kits that were not tested in Montgomery County than there were in other jurisdictions because they don't throw them away, ever.
Harford County, I understand.
Yeah. So some jurisdictions, if they decide not to test it, dispose of the kits. A number of different recommendations. The most important of those recommendations were the following. One, the presumption ought to be that the kit gets tested. Now,
if the victim doesn't want to take further action?
Now, there are times when that doesn't make sense. For example, if the victim doesn't want to be identified or doesn't want to pursue the case. In those situations, it may make sense not to test the kit. But the general rule ought to be test the kit. Second thing is that the victim ought to be notified. Notified, number one, that the kit's been tested, and number two, what the results are. And then the third of the most important instructions are that the kits ought to be maintained, ought to be preserved, and this is expensive, but they ought to be kept for 20 years or until the statute of limitations is run, whichever is longer. So we say those three things are probably the most important recommendations that we made.
Your report notes that Maryland's rape statute requires that in order to prove the crime, the prosecution must show the alleged rapist used force or threat of force. There are legislative proposals to change that, right?
There are, yes.
Where do they stand?
They're pending in committee, I believe, in both the House and the Senate.
So that, and if the legislature passes that, that would no longer be an element that
That's
has
right.
to be proved to prove
That's
rape.
Right.
Last question. In his column in politicalmaryland.com this week, Barry Raskovar speculates that your expanded authority to sue the Trump administration will be the basis of a campaign for governor next year. Is running for governor on your radar screen?
It is not.
What is?
Well, I am seriously considering running for re-election as attorney general.
Heard it here first. Thank you for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you, Sheila.
Brian Frosch was elected Attorney General of Maryland in 2014. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Kass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.